Gracie,
Sarah,
and Josie
from the Girl Scout Troop 1819, Coxsackie, Athens.
And you're listening to
WGXC
ACRA
at 90.7 FM.
Keep on being you.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Akron. You've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today we will hear from Eric Weltman of Food and Water Watch. He spoke with WOOC's Mark Dunley about their climate legislative agenda for this year in Albany. Plus, we will also hear from Julia Jorn as she surveys the local media scene. We'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Makers Syndicate. And all begins after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This
is the network.
This
is the
news.
This is the network.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Food New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Times Union reported on January 17th that three more Albany County residents died from coronavirus over the past 24 hours. They were men in their 50s, 70s, and 80s. That was the second day in a row that Albany County officials announced three deaths from COVID-19. But new positive case numbers may be beginning to decrease from record high levels last week. Case numbers reported early in the week are usually lower, and the holiday weekend could have lowered the totals more. But Albany County officials only announced 498 new positive cases January 17th, a much smaller number than the 1,586 new cases January 13th and the 1,526 new cases announced January 14th. New York City COVID-19 new case numbers have recently plummeted after reaching records last week, and the same figures to happen in the Hudson Valley soon. Quote, "It appears to be peaking now," unquote, said Dr. Stephen Hanks of St. Peter's Health Partners. Quote, "February could look relatively COVID-free here in the Capital Region," unquote. Scientists, of course, have been wrong before during this pandemic, so this is not a sure bet. Quote, I have learned not to make predictions, unquote, Albany County Health Commissioner Dr. Elizabeth Whalen told the Times Union. Quote, certainly we are at a stage in which vaccine uptake is pretty good in our adult population. We have seen a significant percentage of the county that has already had clinical infection, and we are learning that the Omicron variant may be less clinically severe. These are good signs, but we are still very much in the woods, unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Nick Reisman reports in New York State of Politics that Siena College poll results announced January 17th show only 36% of New Yorkers believe race relations in the state are excellent or good, while 60% say they are fair or negative. Last year, only 31% of New Yorkers polled said race relations were good or excellent. In 2014, 47% of New Yorkers believe race relations in New York were positive. Now 72% of New Yorkers polled say people of color face racial discrimination, while 19% say they do not. Siena College pollster Steve Greenberg said, and I quote, the overwhelming majority of New Yorkers of every stripe think racial minorities experience discrimination in New York, including 92% of blacks, 87% of Latinos, and 67% of whites. 84% of Democrats, 64% of independents, and 56% of Republicans, and at least 63% from every region, end quote. He added, and I quote, similarly, at least 62% of voters, regardless of religion, race, party, or region, say that religious minorities experience discrimination, end quote. And half of Latinos and 41% of black New Yorkers reported they were treated unfairly in the last year because of their race, religion, gender, ethnicity, or sexual orientation. He said, and I quote, this number has remained largely consistent over the last 5 years, end quote. Greenberg said, and I quote, Dr. King would have turned 93 this weekend. He said change does not roll in on wheels of inevitability, but come through continuous struggle. New Yorkers say that struggle persists, end quote. Read more about this story in New York State of Politics.
Mid-Hudson News is reporting that Norse Atlantic Airways has received approval from the U.S. Department of Transportation to operate flights between New York Stort International Airport in Orange County and Norway and the European Union. The new service is expected to begin this spring. The airline will also operate flights between Oslo and Fort Lauderdale and Los Angeles. The new service between Norway and Stort is great news, said Maureen Hallahan, president of the Orange County Partnership. Quote, it will hopefully be the beginning of opening up that European market and the UK when people catch on that it is very easy to fly into Stort, easy access to New York City. That is why they built the international arrivals building for, unquote, she said. Norse CEO and founder Bjorn Tore Larsen said the service will be affordable and the airline will deliver many jobs to American workers. Read more about the story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Joshua Solomon reports for the Times Union that instead of paying farm workers by the same rules as grocery store workers, Governor Kathy Hochul wants to give agricultural employers a tax credit for overtime labor. Currently, most workers in New York receive overtime benefits after working 40 hours. But farm workers, because of a quirk in history and a weak labor union, only get overtime after 60 hours of work at regular pay. The New York Farm Bureau, a group opposed to paying farm workers in the same way as grocery workers, said they, and I quote, applaud her for making agriculture a focus of her agenda, end quote, that included, and I quote, sweeping investments, end quote. The State Farm Labor's Wage Board holds its final hearing on this issue later this week. Some advocates for farm workers are skeptical of the tax credit proposal. Paul Son, State Policy Program Director for the National Employment Law Project, said, and I quote, if it were a complete subsidy, it would destroy the incentive power to overtime pay to incentivize more reasonable, shorter work weeks. Otherwise, it won't do anything to help reduce the dangerous work schedules that many farm workers face, end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Chloe Callahan is reporting for the Times Union that residents of the Ulster County town of Wawarsing will sound off January 18th during a public hearing on a proposed major cannabis facility. Chicago-based Cresco Labs has proposed taking over the former Schrade Knife and Avnet Channel Master facilities in Wawarsing to create a cannabis cultivation, manufacturing, and distribution plant on a 91-acre lot that has been empty for 17 years. Of the 91 acres, 6.6 are located within the borders of the village of Ellenville. Because the geographic split heavily favors Wawarsing, the town will oversee the project. The town of Wawarsing last year opted out of allowing cannabis retail dispensaries and on-site consumption lounges within its borders, while the village of Ellenville said yes to both cannabis dispensaries and businesses. Quote, "We are very supportive of it," unquote, said Ellenville Mayor Jeff Kaplan of the new facility. Quote, "We feel it will bring good jobs to the area and that area in particular, which has always been in an industrial site," unquote. Tim Wiedemann, director of economic development at Ulster County, said, quote, "In all of my conversations with Wawarsing town officials, the town is cautious, as they should be, about getting too far ahead of themselves on a project, but is supportive and optimistic about it," unquote. The applicant for the cannabis facility, Valley Agriceuticals, currently operates a medical cannabis manufacturing facility in Wallkill, as well as four medical cannabis dispensaries in New York. Valley Agriceuticals is a division of Cresco Labs, which operates in 10 states where medical cannabis is legal. Cresco originally suggested the addition of 380,000 square foot processing plant would create 300 to 400 jobs, but the latest proposal suggests a workforce of up to 679 employees in the future. One question nearby residents had is whether the cannabis facility will emit a strong odor. Ellenville High School is located 1,000 feet south of the site, and the nearest residential properties are 300 feet away to the southwest. According to the submitted plans, construction could be completed within 12 to 18 months of approval. Once built, the plant would operate from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. on weekdays. Quote, "This is one of the biggest economic opportunities we have had in Ellenville in decades," unquote, Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan said in August. Read more about the story in the Times Union.
Noah Zweifel reports in the Altamont Enterprise about the ongoing political feud against farmer Emily Vincent by Burns Code Enforcement Officer Chance Townsend and the Highway Superintendent Randy Bashwinner. In 2018, Vincent installed a temporary greenhouse without a permit because a permit was not required, but Townsend said she did need a permit and that Vincent owed the town money. Then Bashwinger, Burns Supervisor Sean Lyons, and Deputy Supervisor Dennis Palo tried to get Vincent to resign from the planning board with false allegations and insinuations about her sexuality. Democrats, who held a 3-2 majority at the time on the town board, defended Vincent and kept her on the board. Until 2020, when Republicans took control of the board and illegally fired Vincent from the planning board and replaced her with Thomas Spargo, a former state Supreme Court justice who was disbarred after a bribery conviction for which he served 2 years in jail. So Vincent successfully sued the town and was put back on the planning board. Earlier this year, Vincent wanted a building permit for a barn, only to be told that Townsend had, and I quote, "too much on the docket," end quote. But after she called the town supervisor, Lyons, she was able to get the permit. Now, though, because a contractor poured extra shale over the driveway on her property, Townsend and Bashwinger are ordering Vincent to replace a culvert, even though it was installed by the town, runs underneath a town road, and appears to terminate away from her property. Townsend won't return calls, and neither Bashwinger or Townsend answered emails or calls from the newspaper. Vincent has 30 days as of December 22nd to replace the culvert. Read more about this story in the Altamont Enterprise.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that New York's Black, Puerto Rican, Hispanic, and Asian Legislative Caucus have outlined its legislative priorities for 2022, including combating the effects of pollution and climate change on communities, further changes to the state's criminal justice system, and education laws. Caucus lawmakers on January 17th announced their priorities and policy goals for the year, one day before Governor Kathy Hochul is scheduled to release her first budget proposal. The spending plan is expected to be approved by late March. Quote, people of color face unique challenges as they seek to grow their families, become homeowners, or start a small business. Today, the caucus has presented a blueprint for advancing the equality and prosperity of the communities that we represent, unquote, said Assemblymember Michelle Solages, the caucus chair. Quote, specifically, we have proposed life-changing policies such as a New Deal for CUNY, Universal Pre-K and Childcare, and the New York Health Act, all measures that would reinvigorate our economy and provide substantial support to children and families as we maneuver through this pandemic, unquote. Caucus is calling for a law setting targets for transitioning the state to cleaner and more renewable forms of energy and to invest in ways of reversing years of environmental racism. The lawmakers' agenda also calls for more spending on education to aid student outcomes and improve child development while also seeing through a plan that would make universal pre-kindergarten available statewide. And the caucus also intends to further address the criminal justice laws by ending solitary confinement and making it easier for people in prison to make parole. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 24 degrees. Tuesday night, increasing clouds with a temperature low of around 9 degrees. And on Wednesday, a slight chance of rain and snow showers after 1 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 37 degrees. And on Wednesday night, a chance of rain and snow showers before 1 a.m. Then a chance of snow showers after that. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 22 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and the Columbia counties.
Tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at WGXC on Tuesday, January 18th, including at 9 a.m., Eric Weltman of Food and Water Watch previews the legislative agenda in Albany this year around the climate issues. Then at 10 a.m., Justin Maiman is live in Acre with the Ginger Radio Hour on WGXC. At 11 a.m., hear tracks from Priscilla McLean, Gil Mele, Bruno Menny, and others on the Early Electro Mix program. Then at noon, after the local news, DJ Patty Boom celebrates his first anniversary on the air at WGXC, playing rock, funk, punk, reggae, and more. At 3 p.m., it's time for the Radio Art Hour, today with Yvette Janine Jackson and Diana Chen featured. And at 6 p.m., tune in WGXC's local news program All Together Now with the WGXC Congressional Report featured today about what Representatives Antonio Delgado, Paul Tonko, and the folks who want to challenge them in the election later this year were doing this week. Hear it all on 90.7 WGXC or WGXC.org.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar. HateWatchReport.com, a local tracker of racist and right-wing activity, reports that three people from the New York chapter of the hate group White Lives Matter held a banner January 14th in front of the gazebo in the park in Chatham. The group had been recently placing recruitment stickers on park benches, parking meters, utility poles, and road signs in Hudson and Stockport, and have posted a video of a meetup in North Greenbush. On January 14th, three white supremacists were seen holding a banner for the group in the village square in Chatham. The identity of the three racists was obscured by mask and winter clothing. The Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks hate groups nationally, says the White Lives Matter group first formed in Texas about 7 years ago by leaders associated with neo-Nazi groups. In response, the HateWatchReport.com group is urging local residents to attend a counter-protest at noon, January 19th, at the Village of Chatham Gazebo.
I am Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
Come listen to Catskill Cabin Getaway on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
That's the third Thursday each month.
Or you can listen to our podcasts. Just go to WGXC/something.
It's Catskill Cabin Getaway, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know.
Let's check it out.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, January 18th. Early on, we see it's 15 degrees in Mackey and 26 in Ulster Park. Not much of a warm-up is in store. A high of 26 is expected at 1 p.m. Coupled with midday wind gusts, today will be sub-freezing. Layering up with wind protection will be necessary. Gloves, hats, and coats if you go out. Overnight temperatures fall to 11 degrees before a big bounce up to a high of 40 degrees on a dry Wednesday. A slow drop in temperature and some snow overnight takes us into a Thursday with a high of 28. Extra cold again, single digits Thursday night and into Friday, it will have a high of 16 degrees. Weekend is looking dangerously sub-freezing with light snow. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 3:15 a.m., then low tide at 9:25 a.m., high tide again at 3:15 p.m., and low tide again at 10:13 p.m. Today's river temperature holding steady at 32 degrees. Sunset today will be at 4:37 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:15 a.m. Looking way up, we see Earth is surrounded by a dense solar plasma stream originating from a southern coronal hole. Solar wind speed is currently 550 kilometers per second at 11.2 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 10 megahertz till dark and fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 5, storm level. The current sunspot number is 99. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Dan and Mary Udell of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You got to try something.
I got a job at the radio station.
Oh, great. That place. It's dark and dirty and has like, what, those three weirdos who work there?
That was the song Mountain Water from 2022 from DuBocage and Lee Scratch Perry on the radio at WGXC.
Welcome to Hudson Valley Word of Mouth. I'm your host, Julia Jorn, and I live and work in Round Top in beautiful Greene County. Come along with me as I meander through the Hudson Valley, the Northern Catskills, the Capital Region, and beyond to interview the people behind the special spots and hidden gems that make our area of New York State and our collective community both distinct and diverse. You'll likely discover that you don't have to travel too far to pay them a visit. They may already be in your own backyard or just around the corner. And I'll bet their place might turn out to be that one certain destination you keep meaning to check out. So I'm here to remind you, put it on your list. Together we'll meet shop owners and small business owners, curators, designers, and artists, chefs, farmers, and culinary experts, and other creative entrepreneurs. We'll hear their own personal stories, learn about their unique offerings, and hit them up for their own local recommendations. Thanks for listening. Today I'm in Round Top organizing my calendar about what to see and where to go here in the Catskills and Hudson Valley over the next few months. For the past 20 years or so, I've driven countless miles on back roads, biked around my own neighborhood, and walked on the main streets of probably every town around. Nonetheless, I'm constantly discovering new places to visit, and for that I rely on others, especially all the invaluable local publications that cover our region. In a previous life, I probably wish I could have been a journalist or an editor. I have nothing but total admiration for the people who do these jobs. I love to read, and I'm often asked about what I read, so I decided to share some of my own selections and my own recommendations for great local resources, from magazines, online publications, newspapers, and newsletters. First, I always read the Times Union, the daily newspaper serving the Capital Region. It's been around for a really long time. First published in 1856 as the Morning Times, it changed its name to the Times Union in 1891. And about a year ago, it added a new Hudson Valley section, which I'm really enjoying as it publishes feature-length articles about trends and businesses here in the region, while also highlighting a weekly list of events happening, many being kid and family-friendly, and many are also free. One of my favorite newsletters comes from the paper's food writer, Steve Barnes. It's called Table Hopping and covers where to eat and drink in the area. He also interviews chefs and restaurant owners and keeps tabs on what's opening or sadly closing in this particular industry. Next, I've always relied on Chronogram for my arts and culture information, but it offers so much more. Founded in the 1990s and based in Kingston, Chronogram is a standalone, large-scale, beautifully designed and printed magazine that's distributed in all sorts of places. You can pick it up everywhere from a coffee shop to a bookstore, but it also has an incredibly thorough website. Subscribe to Chronogram's free newsletter and get loads of local tips for film festivals, musical performances, gallery shows, poetry readings, and local shopping right into your inbox. Chronogram also leads the publishing group that features Rural Intelligence. Founded in 2008 by two former editors and reporters coming from the New York Times and New York Magazine, Rural Intelligence is the only online publication dedicated to covering the Berkshires, as well as Columbia and Dutchess County and northern counties in Connecticut. This is the way to go for planning a little excursion to the Berkshires, or if you're an armchair traveler and just want to indulge in real estate listings. Rural Intelligence actually just did a great roundup of what to do and where to go in Great Barrington, and I'm definitely using that list to plan my trip. For more hard-hitting reporting and deeper investigative analysis about important issues that affect our daily lives, whether it's regarding the environment, climate change, politics, education, healthcare, housing, and social justice, this is when I turn to the river. Launched just a few years ago, this independent news outlet also comes from the editorial team at Chronogram. I found the river's consistent and deep diving reporting on the COVID pandemic and how it was and still is affecting our region of upstate New York to be quite remarkable. Another favorite is Hudson Valley Magazine, which I've been reading for the past three decades. Originally founded in the early 1970s and currently based in Poughkeepsie, this monthly magazine is known for its lifestyle features, articles delving into the history of specific places and notable figures, and of course, lots of listings for restaurants, bars, breweries, and loads of recreation. Its editorial coverage spans everywhere from the Capital Region all the way to southern counties like Westchester and Putnam. I also like to read Edible Hudson Valley to learn even more about chefs, farms, farmers markets, bakers, ice cream makers, anything and everything around food. Then, for some truly inspiring nature photography, I look at Adirondack Life. It's been around since the late 1960s, and here's where you can really learn about Adirondack's history, its wildlife, and the unique culture of this particular and spectacular region. The magazine covers New York's 6 million acre Adirondack Park, which offers more wild country than Yellowstone, Yosemite, and Glacier National Parks combined. Over the years, such luminaries as the environmentalist Bill McKibben and novelists Russell Banks and Andrea Barrett have written for the magazine. And finally, I was recently given a pocket-sized Hudson Valley guidebook published late last year by Wildsome. For the past decade, Wildsome has put out these regional travel guides that are packed with loads of insider's info about where to go, where to eat, where to stay, where to shop. Its new Hudson Valley guide is a must-have whether you are new to the area or even if you think you've been everywhere already. A really sweet part of this little Hudson Valley book is an essay by the legendary food editor and writer Ruth Reichel. She stumbled into her career as a food writer and restaurant critic on the West Coast in the 1970s, eventually working at the Los Angeles Times for about a decade. She then came back to her native New York in the early 1990s, where she was the restaurant critic at the New York Times and later the editor-in-chief at Gourmet Magazine. I've read all of her books, from her many memoirs covering different parts of her life, all centered around food, to her cookbooks, of course. She now lives in the Hudson Valley. Here's just a few paragraphs from her essay, My Jane Austen Life, from the Wildsome book. Want to write me a letter? If you simply address it to Ruth, Spencertown, New York, I'll probably get it. When I walk into the quaint little post office in our town, the postmistress will hand it over saying, this came for you. Then Kate will rewrap the package I'm mailing, I never do it well enough to suit her, while filling me in on the latest news about the softball team. That's what I love about living here. Some mornings I wake up, stare at the mists rising off the mountains, and try to figure out how I wandered into this Jane Austen life. For a person raised in the studied anonymity of a Manhattan apartment building, my parents lived next door to the same couple for 40 years without ever knowing their names. It is comforting to be part of a community where privacy is impossible. We even have what amounts to a local squire. The artist Ellsworth Kelly lived in our little hamlet for a large part of his life, and though he's no longer with us, his husband Jack Shear continues to support every local cause. They built us a fire station, renovated town hall, and maintained conservancy trails. At Christmas, Jack even goes around town handing out champagne. And yes, we all watch his comings and goings with the kind of avid curiosity so often found in Austen books, and so rarely in American cities. I know a lot about neighbors I have never met, and they know a lot about me. A couple years ago, I stupidly lit a fire without opening the vent in the fireplace. 5 minutes later, I was doing my best to evict the billows of smoke that filled the house when the fire chief showed up. "I know your husband is away," said this man I'd never met before. "And when the alarm went off, I thought I'd better stop in and make sure you were all right." When we moved here 30 years ago, I had no idea it would be like this. But not a week had passed before a neighbor phoned to say he was certain we had old friends in common. "You don't know me," he began, "but the postmistress told me about you. Why don't you come over for dinner?" I love Ruth's story about living in Spencertown. It's on the other side of the river. Here at my tiny post office in Round Top, my postmistress, Karen, knows everyone on a first-name basis. And it's true, I go there for my daily dose of local gossip, but it's also a place where I can get a good idea about what's going on around town. Even though I scour and devour all the local newspapers and magazines, sometimes I find out about the best stuff on the post office bulletin board. Whether it's a fried chicken dinner fundraiser at the fire station, a pancake breakfast at a local church, or a book sale at the Cairo Library. The bulletin board at the Round Top post office is jam-packed with flyers and business cards, and it tells its own story. So if you're listening in Round Top, I'll probably run into you at the post office.
Thanks for tuning in to Hudson Valley Word of Mouth. If you're interested in checking out an ongoing list of local recommendations, or if you have recommendations of your own to share, go to my Instagram at roundtoprecommends or visit the Wave Farm website at wavefarm.org for the Hudson Valley Word of Mouth segment archives and how to reach me. Talk to you next time.
Tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at WGXC on Tuesday, January 18th, including at 9 a.m., Eric Weltman of Food and Water Watch previews the legislative agenda in Albany this year around the climate issues. Then at 10 a.m., Justin Maiman is live in Acre with the Ginger Radio Hour on WGXC. At 11 a.m., hear tracks from Priscilla McLean, Gil Mellay, Bruno Menny, and others on the Early Electro Mix program. Then at noon, after the local news, DJ Patty Boom celebrates his first anniversary on the air at WGXC, playing rock, funk, punk, reggae, and more. At 3 p.m., it's time for the Radio Art Hour, today with Yvette Janine Jackson and Diana Chang featured. And at 6 p.m., tune in WGXC's local news program All Together Now with the WGXC Congressional Report featured today about what Representatives Antonio Delgado, Paul Tonko, and the folks who want to challenge them in the election later this year were doing this week. Hear it all on 90.7 WGXC or WGXC.org.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Here's 2022 new music from Kate LeBon. The song is called Remembering Me.
Make of my
last minute cancellation at the Last Supper. Oh, you prepared us such an exquisite feast, he said. Now, what do you call it when every part of the bird is used? I pulled up stakes, I went out west, out past the insane desert, out past the useless farm and the parking lot, where the palm trees stoop to kiss the bishop's ring, with the alley cat singing and the hidden buzzer that says ocean instead of the sound of your phone ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing. Tintoretto, it's for you. Tintoretto is for you. The ceiling's on fire, and the contract is binding your little one sick. At the sight, insert three syllables here at night. They drop you from a great height into a war that you were born to lose. Tintoretto, I think it's for you. The mythic beast, you remember the sound of it singing? Ring the steel bell, I don't feel well, I confess I don't feel much like singing. This tune's got three words, ding ding ding, now repeat after me.
From 2022, that was Destroyer with Tintoretto, It's For You.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're talking with Eric Wellman, a longtime organizer for Food and Water Action, Food and Water Watch. We've asked Eric to come on to talk about their legislative program, particularly at the state level around climate, but also a little bit on the federal level. We recently covered a press conference about the proposal to get sort of gas-free New York, no new buildings having gas. Eric, how's that bill looking? Why is it important?
Well, we're at a really exciting moment, Mark, because just last December, in his final bill signing ceremony, as it happens, you know, Mayor de Blasio signed the gas-free NYC legislation into law. In fact, I have one of the pens that the mayor used to sign the bill. And it struck a really significant blow against the fossil fuel industry by banning gas, frack gas in new buildings in New York City. Very bold measure, and we have every hope and expectation that other cities and states across the nation will adopt similar policy, including, of course, New York State. We're working with Senator Brian Kavanaugh, Democrat from Brooklyn, as well as Assemblymember Emily Gallagher, another Democrat from Brooklyn, to advance legislation on the state level. And we're hoping, actually, that Governor Hochul includes the bill in her budget, her proposed budget, which is due next Tuesday. So we've got a great campaign. We're working with some amazing allies, in the Renewable Heat Now Coalition, New York Communities for Change, NYPIRG, Earth Justice. It's a really, you know, broad and powerful coalition. We're building co-sponsors for the bill. And again, you know, urging Governor Hochul to embrace a rapid transition off fossil fuels by, you know, banning gas in new buildings by the end of 2023.
You mentioned Earth Justice. We had Liz Moran on recently, and she was talking about the fight against cryptocurrency mining and its negative climate impact. But I know Food and Water Watch also works at the federal level. So what's sort of the blend between state and federal action on cryptocurrency, and why is this so bad?
That's a good question. So as you mentioned, you know, Food and Water Watch is working with, you know, Earth Justice, as well as a tremendous coalition that spans the state, literally from, you know, Long Island to Buffalo. In particular, we're working with some great activists and allies in the Finger Lakes, who are concerned about a frack gas power plant that's being used to power Bitcoin cryptocurrency mining, working with Yvonne Taylor and the folks from the Seneca Lake Guardians, who, you know, very concerned, again, about not only the climate impacts, but all the noise and other pollution associated with this power plant, which is, you know, located right in the heart of the Finger Lakes. We are, I say, you know, slowly cultivating a greater awareness of the tremendous energy consumption associated with Bitcoin mining. We just got news that the House of Representatives is actually holding a hearing. I don't know too much about it, but just got an email saying that the House of Representatives, you know, at the federal level is holding a hearing on cryptocurrency mining and its environmental impacts. That's tremendous. We certainly hope that, you know, members of the New York Congressional Delegation who are on the Energy Commerce Committee, including Paul Tonko from Albany, you know, participate in this hearing. But in the meantime, you know, we're not only urging the Hochul administration to put a halt to the Greenwich Power Plant, as well as a similar project in North Tonawanda, which is near Buffalo. We're urging the administration to, you know, not provide the permits necessary for these projects, but also to pass legislation putting a pause on these projects. We're working with a wonderful, wonderful assembly member from the Finger Lakes, Anna Kellos, who's been a tremendous ally, as well as Senator Parker, Kevin Parker, you know, also a Democrat from Brooklyn, on legislation to put a pause, a moratorium on these projects while we take a closer look at the potential impacts of the tremendous energy consumption associated with the industry and its potential to really disrupt and undermine our ability to meet New York's climate goals. Again,
we're running out of time. So I understand. I get a lot of emails from you these days, Eric, about trying to get NYPA, New York Power Authority, to build renewables, public power. What's that all about?
Absolutely. Well, Food and Water Watch is a proud member of the New York State Public Power Coalition. It includes the, you know, DSA and number of, you know, DSA chapters, as well as the Long Island Progressive Coalition. So we've got, you know, Food and Water Watch is part of a broad movement that's encouraging the Hochul administration and the legislature to really unleash the New York Power Authority, which folks may know was established back in the day by FDR. It's the nation's largest state-owned public utility. It has a really strong track record of providing affordable and green public power. And, you know, the climate crisis demands that we, you know, use all of our capacity to build and operate and maintain public renewable power. And so right now, NYPA, unfortunately, is constrained from building new utility scale renewable energy production. And so what we're asking is that Governor Hochul and the legislature embrace legislation that would really unleash NYPA and enable it to build the renewable capacity, the generating capacity that we desperately, frankly, need to meet New York's bold, ambitious climate goals.
So let's try to spend the last 3 minutes on federal legislation. Something that you mentioned earlier, which I had not heard about previously, the Future Generations Protection Act. What's that about?
So we are working with Representative Jan Schakowsky, who's a member of House leadership from Chicago, and she's introduced legislation, H.R. 6168. Again, that's H.R. 6168, the Future Generations Protection Act. And what it really addresses is Food and Water Watch's supply-side concerns. So it bans fracking, it bans new fossil fuel infrastructure, and it bans the export of fossil fuels. So, again, Representative Jan Schakowsky has introduced this bill. It's been co-sponsored thus far by 8 members of New York's congressional delegation. Paul Tomko, unfortunately, Delgado not among them, so we're missing a lot of folks.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we're missing your buds from the Hudson Valley and you know, Central New York and the Capital District. But, you know, we're really hoping that, you know, the entire delegation, including, Sean Patrick Maloney and, you know, again, Delgado and Tomko, support the Future Generations Protection Act, H.R. 6168, which, again, really, you know, strikes a blow against the fossil fuel industry and adopts the policies that we need to reduce our reliance on dirty fossil fuels and move off fossil fuels.
Is the Biden administration doing what Food and Water Watch wants at the national level?
In short answer, no. Late last year, Food and Water Watch was part of a broad movement that held a week-long series of actions, arrestable actions outside the White House. The Biden administration has not lived up to its promise. We're hoping, actually, that they embrace a ban on fracking waste in the Delaware River Basin, which is a source of drinking water for 15 million people. The Biden administration, along with Governor Hochul, is represented on the Delaware River Basin Commission, the DRBC. And right now, they're considering a proposal around fracking waste and water withdrawals for fracking. And this is an important moment, an opportunity for President Biden, as well as Governor Hochul, to strike a blow against fracking by supporting a ban on fracking waste and water withdrawals for fracking in the Delaware River Basin, which, again, is a source of drinking water for 15 million people, including millions of New Yorkers.
So, Eric, I imagine some of us will see you in the Capital District on January 25th. Climate can't wait. If people want
Absolutely.
More information about Food and Water Watch, how do they do that?
Well, they can visit the Food and Water Watch website. They can email me at eweltman@fwwatch.org.
Thank you very much, Eric Weltman. This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Rock and roll music, that's what we're going to use. You say, well, preacher, you play music with a beat. There's nothing but I don't want. I won't. I read that and I thought, the music scene. Well, they were going to do it. And engaging in the sex act. They're asked the question when police dare not step in with the air thick with marijuana smoke. They had one right near Baton Rouge the other day. 100,000 kids were there. The huge speakers that beat out the music as dope-filled entertainers and performers beat up on the guitars and drums in the streets. Those young people that ripped off their clothes and acted like animals. Ask the question why by reporters. They said it's the music. It's the music. It gets down in you, it washes over you and beats upon your brain. And I really didn't know what I was doing, they said. I just pulled off my clothes and I had to do it.
When you start to feel the heat,
and you boys and girls that have Beatle records at home, this is the most rotten, dirty, damnable, filthy, putrid filth that this nation or the world has ever seen. This to be in your home, you ought to be taken out somewhere and horsewhipped. You hear me? And I mean it, my friend. They're having sex, the sex, the sex.
sex, the 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 sex